Do we need to start again?
Okay.
Mention the committee, too.
This is the Senate Committee on Consumer Protection and Public Affairs for Tuesday, February 16th, 2010. I'm going to reopen a public hearing on House Bill 3610. We were in the middle of a panel on House Bill 3610 when we needed to relocate, so we are going to rejoin the panel, absent one of the panel participants, Angela Martin, who cannot be here, but now we are going to hear from Sybil Hebb. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Bonamici, members of the committee. Member of the committee, my name is Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center, here in support of House Bill 3610. I'll speak to the bill as well as to the amendment, or both of the amendments. The Law Center is supportive of the bill. The principle in the bill is to ensure that the filing of an affidavit of compliance with the requirements of Senate Bill 628 is required to be filed 5 days prior to the date of the foreclosure sale. That's in the best interest of our clients. We are concerned with the way that the current law reads, which allows would allow the filing of that affidavit on the same day as the sale, could even be later that day after the sale has taken place. That puts people in a position in which they are trying to potentially go back and undo a sale that was inappropriately closed without the compliance, rather than having a window within which they can raise their claim or their concern and hopefully postpone that sale if the law has not been met, the requirements of the law have not been met. So we appreciate the creation of a window prior to the sale during which everyone can ensure that the requirements of 628 have been met. To speak to the amendment, I think Angela and John did a great job of setting out the interests of consumers in that amendment and also some of the national comparison landscape. From our perspective, our clients do, in fact, echo the same concerns that were expressed. We have folks calling us. They've been unable to get through to people. When they do get through, the information that they get back is either truncated, sometimes based in error. They may have lost files. And so requiring that there is some evidence that the analysis of a borrower's circumstances was actually done, and so that the borrower can look and see, number one, what the reasoning and rationale was. We think it'll also be good for lenders because sometimes it will make sense, and the borrower would then understand and be able to make decisions and move forward. Sometimes it won't make sense, and it will be evidence of the fact that the correct documents were not assessed, and the borrower then has a chance to provide additional information or to contest the analysis. And so we appreciate it because we think it helps make sure that actual analysis is done and done correctly. So,
thank you. And just for clarifying the record, you're referring to the Dash 5?
Correct. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Just to clarify. All right. Questions? Senator Rosenbaum, any questions?
No.
Okay. I guess I just wanted to make a comment about how this issue is something that came up in our January hearing where we had kind of a follow-up hearing to Senate Bill 628, and it's one of the things that was discussed about because I had heard from constituents who have concerns similar to what both of you mentioned about the communication issues and not getting the information that they need about the reasons for not being approved for a loan modification, and I believe that at that time we asked the lenders if they kept the information, and I know we have a couple of people who are going to testify on behalf of financial institutions, but it's my understanding, based on the prior hearing that we had in January, that this information that we're seeking in the Dash 5 amendments is something that the financial institutions have, particularly because it's required by HAMP. So, thank you for your testimony. And anyone else?
Thank you.
No. Okay. No questions? All right. Mr. Cosgrove and Tim Martinez is in the building. Do you want us to wait for him?
Do you want me to go there?
Madam Chair, Mr. Martinez is down in House Rules as well. Paul Kozarov on behalf of the Oregon Financial Services Association. We, in the January hearing in House Consumer Protection, raised some concerns about the base bill, and since then have had discussions with Representative Richardson. I think there's a misunderstanding of why this affidavit is recorded and what purpose it provides. If you think of a situation of a consumer who's in foreclosure, they don't have access to recorded records without paying a title company to find them. If they were interested in finding out what was going to be in the affidavit, the way effectively to get it and for free is by asking the trustee. But in fact, having it recorded early, I would suggest to you, is actually anti-consumer. And let me tell you why. Consumers have up until 5 days before the date of sale in which to cure by paying the arrearage only and stopping the foreclosure. Asking us to incur additional costs, we generally wait to record all these affidavits till, and there are many affidavits, not only this one, there's the affidavit that shows we published, the affidavits that show we served or posted. There's a whole range of affidavits. We generally wait to record those till at least after that five-day period has expired, because if the consumer is going to cure by paying the delinquency, it saves them a good deal of costs, and as we've increased recording costs, that's particularly true. However, if that be the wish of the body, we can record these affidavits at any time. It just, we also raise the question of why there would be different dates for different affidavits, which I think is really should be the bar's issue, not so much mine. With respect to the Dash 4s, I thought as I first saw it a few minutes ago, actually about an hour ago, that it might have solved the problem of having different dates for different affidavits, but in fact it doesn't. And if the Dash 4 did do that, I think that would be helpful. With respect to the Dash 5, that's a substantial change, and let me raise just a couple of questions in terms of what the Dash 5 says. In the section of the 628, Senate Bill 628, that the Dash 5s amend, it always refers to the beneficiary of the beneficiary's agent, because many of these loans are under the authority of servicers, not really the beneficiary, who may in fact be a trustee for a pool of mortgages. This particular change on lines 13, 14, 15, and later in the bill it's repeated, doesn't talk about the beneficiary or its agent. It talks just about the beneficiary. The second thing is it mentions federal or state law. I'm not aware of any state law, and I guess, and I didn't hear any in terms of the proponents' discussions either. The only federal program that may require the beneficiary to use a calculation is the HAMP program, which some lenders voluntarily choose to participate in and others don't. So I think we need to do a little bit of work on that language. At least I think it's confusing to say there are state programs or state laws that would require the beneficiary to use the particular test if there aren't any. And I'm not sure it's really federal law that requires the beneficiary to who is participating in HAMP to do this. It's part of their agreement. And then the last one, and perhaps the most important one about the new language, is shall disclose the results of the calculation or test to the grantor. I don't know what that means. Does that mean all the internal calculations, or does that literally mean the result, which is you passed or didn't pass, it worked or it didn't work? So in terms of that language, I think there needs to be some additional work. My final comment is this bill has an emergency clause effective upon passage. As the base bill, it's probably not particularly problematic to have an emergency clause because, except for changing the date of the recording of some affidavits, which we can probably get out to the as information to trustees and attorneys who are in this business relatively quickly, there aren't any particularly substantial changes. With respect to the Dash 5s, however, that's a major change to a complicated bill that just went into effect. And I would suggest to you it's unreasonable and inappropriate to have, if you're even considering the Dash 5s, to have those be effective on an emergency clause basis. I would also just say that there are a number of attorneys, including a number of trustees. The chair, you may recall, we had, when we're dealing with Senate Bill 628, a whole lot of interested parties, both title companies and the United Trustees Association, a variety of others, none of whom at this point have seen this. So there may be, these are my initial thoughts rather quickly, having just seen this about an hour ago, and there may be other concerns, but at least I think these are among the concerns that people might have on the Dash 5s. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Madam Chair.
Senator Burdick.
Thank you. On the dash fives, if it can be cleaned up so that you put in the beneficiary or their agent or, you know, the technical changes that you talked about, would your concerns, just off the top of your head, be alleviated if the emergency clause were deleted?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, the cleanup, I think, would be very helpful, and the emergency clause is pretty critical. The thing that my members, there are members who are credit unions and banks who are members of HAMP. My members are not. I just know that HAMP is a complicated program. I don't know what it is that they have to do to show the results, and I don't know what kind of calculations we're asking them to disclose. So I just am maybe not the right person to answer that.
Who would be the right person? Madam Chair, do we have access to that person to see if it's even doable?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, Pam Levitt represents the credit unions and Tim Martinez represents banks, and they're both, I think, down in House Rules at the moment where there's another bill of great concern that's being heard. I think what we can do, since this bill isn't going to be acted on today, is get this out to the United Trustees Association and the various bank lawyers and credit union lawyers and get you back that information from people who actually have their members who participate in the HAMP program. But if this is only intended to apply to HAMP, that's part of the clarification I would hope we could make, and then we can get the people who know HAMP in front of you to find out what else, if anything, needs to happen.
Thank you. It is intended to apply to financial institutions who are under HAMP.
Sorry. My only concern, Madam Chair, is that, you know, I can't believe that this wouldn't be doable for them to be able to give the answers as to why they, you know, made the decision they did. But I still think we need to be aware of what they would have to do, you know, in terms of the time, since it has an emergency clause.
That's correct. And I will get in touch with them, and Lori can help me do that later today or tomorrow, and then this is going to be back up on Thursday. So we'll take another stab at it on Thursday.
Madam Chair, may I just add that, because I think it would be helpful. The HAMP program, as I understand it, and I've tried to read it, because back in 6 to 28 days, I actually did try to read all the HAMP requirements, and they were being changed at that time, and I haven't read the new ones. But at least the original ones required a multi-stage process of decision-making to determine whether somebody qualified for HAMP. If we are choosing to require that the banks and credit unions who do this declare all of that and put that in the affidavit, that's quite different from something that is shorter and more summarized about you didn't qualify because your income was too low. If you understand what I mean, I think there are a series of both questions and calculations that are done, and you have to get to the bottom of that to know whether you qualify for HAMP or not. So it's mostly a matter of how much of that we are asking and making sure we're clear about how much of that we're asking to be revealed to the borrower, but also put in this affidavit that has to be recorded.
Just to clarify, on page 2 of the Dash 5 amendments, lines 22 through 25, in the affidavit, we certainly don't want a lot of personal financial information. We want a statement that the beneficiary, and that should say, or its agent, provided the results of the calculation to the grantor. So we don't want the specific. I think that we'd run into problems with putting a lot of personal financial information.
I agree, Madam Chair. I agree it would.
Affidavit. But a statement that information was provided to the homeowner is what the goal is with that language.
Thank you. I'd be
questions?
Happy.
Senator Rosenbaum?
And if I could just clarify one thing in your testimony. So, Paul, you said that the clause that says if federal or state law requires that, you don't think there is any law that requires it. I missed your point of where that's creating confusion.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosenbaum, it's probably because I didn't make the point very clearly. I don't know of any state law, so that's a confusion of mine. I think the chair has already clarified that it's really intended to deal with the HAMP program. The HAMP program, as I understand it, and I think I've now revealed that I only have some knowledge of HAMP, and there are others that have greater knowledge, is a program that lenders can voluntarily agree to participate in. So it's not exactly a federal law requirement. Once you agree to participate in it, you have to follow the rules of the program. I'm not sure that is even federal law. It's the rules of the program. But I think if we're trying to say this applies to people who are working in the HAMP program, that'd be better just to say that. And I'm sure we can find words that would do that, that wouldn't raise the ambiguities and concerns that these general terms do. Does that make sense, Senator?
Yeah, I just missed whether you were saying federal law didn't cover it or state law. And it sounds like, I mean, actually, if we had language that said, if state law does this and there's no state law, then obviously, though it might not be the most elegant construction, it wouldn't have any legal effect, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Rosenbaum, correct, but I think in this area, especially when we're making multiple changes, as we have been in the last couple of years, it would be better not to add confusion to the process, but add clarity, and so I'm searching for clarity there. And if that's what
we
the intent is, I'd just like to get it
clarified.
Right.
Agreed.
Appreciate that.
And any other questions for Mr. Cosgrove? We're going to wait just a moment to see if neither Pam Levitt nor Tim Martinez is in the hallway. So
I think they are down the hall,
well,
Senator.
Right,
I'm sorry.
Busy.
I mean, in another room.
Understood.
Thank
okay.
you.
I would like to continue to work on this Dash 5 amendment for the rest of today and tomorrow and see if we can have something for the Thursday hearing that will provide that information to the borrowers. I think that the concerns that we heard in January and the concerns that I've been hearing from my constituents, that it's important to get them as much information as possible. And if the financial institution already has the information, I think it's, again, a benefit to everyone to have that information provided. So I'd like to continue to work on that. If there's anyone else, I know Mr. Cosgrove has given us some suggestions. Anyone else who has suggestions about that language in the Dash 5 can get that to me or to Lori as soon as possible. And then this will be back up on Thursday, the February 18th. And I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3610. And that concludes our business for today.